All right, good morning. I will call us to order in our regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on this Tuesday, May 9th, 2017, and ask if everybody please join the Board of the Honor America with the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Well, thank you. Good morning. I tried really hard to move this meeting outside, but they wouldn't allow me to do that. So we're stuck in here with no windows. Public comment number one is an opportunity for members of the public to address topics on today's agenda. Anybody wishing to do so, come right on up. And seeing no one moving immediately, microphone, we'll move on to discussion of new legislation and how it impacts county government. County Attorney Jessica Reynolds. Jess, thanks so much for coming over and doing this with us.
Well, good morning. It's my pleasure.
Good morning, Jess.
Hey. I'm Jessica Reynolds, the Story County Attorney, and I was asked by Supervisor Sanders to come and discuss some pieces of legislation as my office is combing through them and deciding how they apply to county government. So this is an introductory piece today. There are many things in the works at this point in my office as we review current policies and practices and how new legislation affects us. So I wanted to start off with a bang. So we're starting off with fireworks legislation. And as you all know, there are consumer fireworks that were legalized in Iowa and the sale of them. But what I wanted to talk about here today are a couple of things. First of all, home rule was not stripped from this legislation, so local municipalities are able to regulate the lighting off of fireworks. And that hasn't been as publicized. And so, for example, the city of Ames restricts fireworks. You can't light off fireworks in the city of Ames. And if you do so, then it's punishable as a simple misdemeanor. And you still need a permit to do professional level fireworks. And even if you live, so I'd say if you live, whatever municipality that you live in, you should check your city ordinances to make sure that you're legal before you light off fireworks. And even if you are legal, there are specific dates in which you can light off fireworks, and there are specific times in which you can light off fireworks. So what's been less publicized are these restrictions, and I'd just say that moving forward, that's something for everyone to consider. I did talk to Mark Lambert, the assistant city attorney in Ames, yesterday, and he said that they're going to be working from the Ames perspective to publicize that and get that out. So you may have constituents that ask that, so I just bring that to your attention.
We have approved a couple of commercial level in the past, okay, and nothing changes there then?
Correct. You still need a permit? Great question, and that will still apply. Okay. We still have that authority.
Thank you.
Any other firework questions?
Well, since I live out in Incorporated, what's that do out there?
Well, we don't regulate those, so
they're pretty much...
You're okay, but watch your dates and your times.
That applies out there, too?
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly, yep.
That's it.
Thank you. Good question.
Commercial.
Not consumer.
But Marty, we're trying to keep the noise down right there across from the firing range, so you make sure that you're...
I should have you out one day.
I just wanted to touch briefly on Senate File 504, mental health funding. I know that you have all stayed up to speed on this. But basically, it provides for several things I wanted to touch on. First of all, it provides for equalization of property tax levies within each region. This really doesn't impact our region because, as you all know, we already do that within our region. Our current levy within our region is 2229, and we have equalized that levy with all of our counties in our region. Senate File 504 does not get rid of the statewide funding cap. And then it sets forth an equation for maximum levies. And so what that equates to in our region is $35.50. We were at $31.94. You know, obviously we're not to that at this point, and really dollar-wise, because there's still the $11.5 million max, it really doesn't impact our region much. However, a new provision that goes into effect fiscal year 2021 talks about basically you can't hoard dollars in the either joint regional accounts or the separate county accounts that go into the region. They want to make sure that the cash flow doesn't exceed 20% of the gross expenditures from all of those accounts combined. And so that's something that will kick in fiscal year 2021. And my reading of that is that basically they want those dollars being spent on services and they don't want us accumulating a lot of savings. Senate File 504 also sets up a study group to study how things are going with counties and report back to the legislature.
I have a question, probably for Carla, though, but Carla, is the region going to maybe send out some guidelines or some explanation, the region's administrative team?
I haven't heard that there's anything in the works right now. I know at our last administrative team meeting, we're working on developing the work groups. So Jody's collecting names for individuals who may be interested in that, and the focus right now is to try and get those work groups going. It's a pretty tight time frame. I think the groups are supposed to start meeting in July, and we have our first report due to the state in October.
Thank you.
You bet.
So the reality for us to keep our eyes on as we look at budgets is that between now and 2021, we're going to see an artificially low levy for mental health because we've got the region has to burn through the ending fund balances to get down to this 20 or 25%, I think, depending on number of residents. But then what we're going to see in Story County is we're going to see what was traditionally a maximum of $3,066,000 that we could levy go to more like $3.6, $3.7 million once we get down and we're cash flowing this on an annual basis. We need to keep our eye on it. One of my big concerns, and I don't know if either of you would address this, is there's no allowable growth in any of this. So we're creating some of these services, we're trying to address need, and yet there's no recognition that generally over time costs will go up.
Hopefully the study groups can address some of that with recommendations.
Yeah, I believe there is a, I don't have the legislation in front of me, but I believe there is a study group that's supposed to convene and then report back to legislators on fiscal viability of what's been set in place. We've had discussions at the administrative team level that any services that we develop, we need to try and ensure that they meet Chapter 24 criteria so that they can be Medicaid fundable to help with those dollar caps and everything. Yeah.
I think those are good concerns.
Thank you, Carla.
Yeah, but thank you.
Another piece of legislation that impacts us that I know you all are up to speed on. I know Jim Hanks briefed you on this, but House File 291, collective bargaining. We know that excluding our law enforcement contracts, the union negotiations are now limited to base wages. And we know that unions are barred from automatic deduction of union dues from members' paychecks, and that at each contract negotiation session prior to that, the union will need to be recertified. And then we've also got changes to arbitration, which allow the arbitrator to take into consideration things that they couldn't before, and also cap the amount that the wages can be raised by the arbitrator, either 3% or a percentage equal to the cost of living, whichever is lower. So those are some substantial changes to our collective bargaining law.
We currently have two of our unions that qualify as public safety unions. One of them is right on the edge, where if we were to add a staff member that wasn't help them qualify, they would actually roll off. We would only have one union that qualifies as public safety.
House File 517 gun legislation. This is what you've probably been reading about the Stand Your Ground law that eliminates the alternative course of action requirement in the law if you're using deadly force. And then it further goes on to make a right of action against city, counties, or townships that would restrict that the use of guns in any way that would not be consistent with state law. So there is a state preemption provision of this, and then a right of action if that's violated. I wanted to throw out a couple of miscellaneous pieces of legislation that caught my eye as I was reviewing them. First of all, there's a new 24/7 alcohol monitoring provision under 321J.2, which is OWI law, and that allows for people that require ignition in their lock devices in their car to get a temporary restricted license to also be subject to twice daily alcohol monitoring. This is something that my office is consulting with now with the Story County Sheriff's Office as far as the viability of them possibly being a repository for this. The concern that this legislation addresses is obviously if someone gets into their vehicle and blows into an ignition interlock device, that means that they're not drinking at that time. But that doesn't mean that they can't blow into that ignition interlock device, have someone else blow into that interlock ignition device, and then they could soon consume alcohol at some point later. So this more strictly monitors alcohol consumption while on a temporary restricted license. Senate File 234, texting while driving, don't text while you're driving. There's also a provision that if you're texting while driving and cause a fatality, makes that a vehicular homicide. Senate File 358, electronic search warrants. This is something our office is really excited about. We're able to use our electronic filing system now to obtain search warrants, which is going to be a great help to us as we use our electronic system for basically everything except search warrants. So now we'll use the search warrants. Senate File 401, this is a wonderful piece of legislation that passed. Currently, when there are really limited ways in which crime victims can get civil no-contact orders. In general, there has to be a crime charged before you can get a no-contact order, and then that's called a criminal contact order. But Iowa Code Section 236 allows for civil no-contact orders in cases of domestic violence, and now there is a civil no-contact order provision for sexual assault victims, and that means that they're able to obtain no-contact orders against the perpetrators even if the crimes don't end up being charged for some reason. They're able to do that lower burden in civil court and prevent future contact with that perpetrator. So it's great, great legislation. House File 52, interference with official acts, they've added bailiffs to that protection in the law, which we are glad to see as well. So what didn't pass? I want to talk about a couple of things that didn't pass that you might have heard about. Emily's Law, and I'm so excited that Representative Heddens is here, House File 428. She fought really hard for that along with us, and that is a change to Iowa's hit-and-run statute. And my understanding is that next year she, along with Representative Nunn, will be bringing that back forward, and we're excited at our chances going forward next year. Interestingly, if you've all been watching the news, the Bachelor, Chris Bowles, that was involved in allegedly involved in a hit-and-run fatality is kind of bringing new light to this law in a different way, because the contention that my understanding, the contention that his lawyers are making is that he satisfied the law because he called and that he's arrived and then he left. So that's kind of bringing new attention to this law, which hopefully will help us change it in the future. Also, our medical examiner fee legislation did not pass again. I'd like to thank Representative Heddens for pushing that hard for us. We know that here at the county that's an issue. The elimination of county compensation boards did not pass. That will, county compensation boards will continue to set salaries for elected officials. Senate File 108, legalizing machine guns, did not pass. Senate File 280, reducing marijuana penalties to simple misdemeanors, did not pass. Senate File 335, death penalty legislation, did not pass. and Senate File 481, Immigration Enforcement, which a lot of people refer to as sanctuary city legislation, did not pass. And those have been in the media quite a bit, and they would have impacted us, and so I wanted to make sure that I addressed those. Does anyone have any questions I can answer? Bob?
I think it's a good update. Thank you. I tried to track it, but this is nice. This is nice because it lets us know what could have affected us or what is going to affect us.
Wonderful. There was a lot that happened in the session as I was reviewing things. So I'm grateful for the opportunity to present to the board. Feel free to call me at any time with any questions.
Good. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.
Next, NAMI of Central Iowa annual report. Lisa had a complete coincidence that now we have Lisa Head.
Perfect segue.
Good morning, and thank you for allowing me to switch dates where I could actually be here versus having a surrogate.
We like it when you report and you're actually here.
I kind of thought I could probably more readily answer your question. So I am Lisa Hedinson. I'm the new executive director for NAMI of Central Iowa. I've been in the position almost a year now. It'll be a year mid-July. I did email you all some information in regards to NAMI, so I'm just going to hit some of the highlights. We do support, educate, and advocate for persons affected by mental illness, whether this be a family member or the individual themselves. There are various programs that we provide through funding that we receive through ASSET, one being our education program, and we do various education programs. We monthly do a public education outreach, and some of the topics that we have provided at those education opportunities is we shared the film Infinitely Polar Bear. It's about a gentleman and his family who he deals with bipolar and the effects that it has on his wife and his family and his children. And then after the movie, we had Dr. Carver Nebbe, who is a psychiatrist at Iowa State, and then a woman in recovery from bipolar be on the panel and answer questions to the audience. We joined with the Arco Story County and had the annual candidates forum. Additionally, we had Dr. Gentile come in and do a presentation on the effects of media and mental health, which is really quite interesting and felt like I could have spent more than just the hour and a half with him and just delve even a bit further. And then we also had Hope Wellness Center that I know the county helps with, the region helps fund out of Woodward, to come and talk about their crisis services because I know of a number of families that have been referred there and wanted to see a broader awareness as to what they do, what they provide in the regional area that they support. We also do various specific classes. We have our basic, our peer-to-peer, and our family-to-family classes, and they run anywhere from 6 weeks to 12 weeks. We're currently running a family-to-family class, which is a 12-week course. We have 14 participants taking that class, which is a very good size, which you like to have. You don't want one too large, but one enough so that they can share stories and situations that's going on. The class provides information on mental illness, medications, coping skills, and it meets weekly. And we are doing this one out in the region. We're actually doing it over in Boone County, and then we have a committee that is working on generating for our next class that we'll be offering hopefully this fall. We do various community outreach presentations. I've done a number of, I may have been in the legislative session and generally was in the office on Monday mornings and Fridays, and I did have a former director come in generally to help me out. I did several presentations on Sundays for the adult learning classes at various churches in Nevada and in Ames, for example. Civics groups from two ISU classes on Fridays. When I look at the tally of individuals, it's been nearly 300 individuals that I've provided information to on NAMI Central Iowa. We do a monthly newsletter. Every other month it's only electronic, or every other month it is only hard copy, but every month we do an electronic copy. So currently we have about 290 on our electronic copy that we see our newsletter, and almost 400 on our hard copy that we see that. We do various advocacy initiatives. with our families. We get their action alerts through NAMI-Iowa or NAMI-National if they're a member in particular. Our peers did a training called NAMI Smarts, and one of my wellness coordinator went through specific training on advocacy for persons with mental illness and how do you tell your story, and then did a presentation to the group at our wellness center, and then actually some of them came down to the Capitol to put those skills to use. We do have our support groups. We have our connection support groups. That is a peer support group that meets Thursday afternoon from 2 to 3:30, and we're started a evening one. It's been a little bit slow to get folks to come that one. We were actually asked to start an evening one by a couple of individuals, and those individuals, which was great, got a job. So they're unable to attend the evening group. And oftentimes when you get something started, you know, they're the ones that if they come, they bring somebody else along. So we're still working to see if we can outreach them, if this is really a need to have an evening one as well as our daytime. Our daytime one is well attended. It's quite consistently anywhere from 12 to 15 individuals that come to the daytime support group. We also have our family support group, and that meets the fourth Thursday of each month, and that has grown significantly over the year that I've been there. It has been inconsistent in having somewhere between 4 to 6 to maybe 8 individuals, and now we're pretty consistent with 12 individuals coming to that particular group. Two of my board members recently were out in Washington, D.C., and became trained on the family support program to be state trainers, so we can help provide training in other areas in the region. I know that, for example, Jasper County is interested in having a family support group, specific anonymous family support group growing. They need to have the specific training, and I now have folks that can go to that area and do the specific training to them so that they can have an NAMI family support group going there. Lastly, I just want to talk about that we do have our wellness center. We are open Monday to Friday afternoons from 1 till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We do have various activities that go on at the center, anywhere from bringing someone in to do exercise with the client. We've done a nutritional series. We're currently doing, on Tuesdays, doing 100 days of art. Our peers are quite artistic. I think I need to sit on a class with them because my 50 people are, you know, about the extent of my artistic talent. And then they will be showing their artwork in the month of August at Cafe Vietnam. They'll be having it there the entire month. We've had 74 different individuals come to our center with a monthly average of over 165. So things are going very well. It's definitely busy there. And then beyond just going on the center, I spend my time out in the region as well, working with various counties. And now that session is over, setting up all the meetings to be back out there again. And I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Questions for Lisa?
Well, Lisa, for the wellness center or some of the presentations, are there people who are able to get there from outside of Ames?
Mm-hmm. We do have people from outside of Ames that do come. Some that will carpool, some that will drive in. And we do offer a small stipend that they can sign a form for us, and then we'll help pay for some of their gas, because that is an issue for a number of individuals. I'll also add, too, is with our asset application is last year when we submitted our asset application, me being new, and as it is oftentimes when you get a new person in, you don't quite know how the other person calculated their cost, their unit cost, which I could not figure out. I would say I worked very hard with my treasurer and then with Deb and Jean, and we have that figured out. So you will probably see a significant change in those numbers when we do this next fiscal year's ask, just because we've got a better accounting for it, and we are on track to pull down all of our funds through asset, which I know there's been in the past that has not necessarily occurred.
I just have a housekeeping comment. I tried to attend the Hope Wellness Center presentation, and I couldn't find anything on your website about the time for it, and so I called the library, and they told me 6 to 8. So obviously when I showed up at 6 o'clock, there was nobody there. So it's just a note you might want to
have. Yeah, no, I appreciate that. We do have a new website, and I'm learning how to answer.
Oh, you were the webmaster.
Yeah, well, we actually have a little miscommunication between myself and one of the board members who was going to do that. And so I'm actually getting another training done on Wednesday. Where I can actually focus. I try to do a training during session, and I'm sorry, it just didn't.
Yeah, why?
Okay, that will be, and I appreciate that.
Are there any questions?
You had made a note that caught my mind or caught my attention on the effects of media on mental health, and like you had more that you would like to comment on. What did you learn?
Well, it was really quite interesting. I heard Dr. Gentile actually last year speak at the Mental Health Expo and was talking about, just some of the research that's out there, really some of the research that's not out there in regards to the impact of what the media does on mental health. When you see violence portrayed, whether on TV or through video games, and how that kind of translates into not necessarily causing a mental health condition by any means, but how it can exasperate things. So it was interesting commentary, and I would certainly look to have him come back again and speak to the group and really try to do some additional publicizing on it. Probably the dozen or so people that were there all have walked away with kind of the similar comments.
Hey, Lisa, thanks.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.
Next, we have Micah. Arlene, how are you?
I'm great. Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning to all of you. I'm Arlene McAtee. I'm the executive director of Micah, and I think we have a couple of handouts that are... I'm going to talk in general about Micah, and then we have Gloria Simons, our health services director, who will talk to you about the services that are funded by ASSET and other health services that we have. And then we have Josie Spallin. She's our new Hardin County and Story County Family Development Center director. With some new members, I thought I would give you the very quickest history of Micah and his relationship to Story County that I can. Micah came into being in 1965. It was part of the War on Poverty, the Economic Opportunity Act. At that time, the catchment area for Micah was Hardin, Marshall, Story, and Boone counties. In 1974, the state realigned the community action agencies. And at that time then, they took Hardin and Marshall and put it with Tama and Poweshiek, and Story and Boone went with an agency that was out of Des Moines. Then what happened was in 1980, Micah's board of directors was approached by the Story County supervisors requesting to realign themselves with Micah yet again. That process took about a year. So in 1981, Story County became a part of Micah's core counties, as we refer to them. Now, we have services in those five core counties. We have most of our services there, but Micah does provide services in a 30-county area. So there are a variety of things that we do outside of that core service area. And what you have in front of you is last year's annual report that gives a quick summary of who it is that Micah is serving. And this would be for our entire service area. But you'll see that we serve 25,413 individuals. That's an unduplicated count. You'll see that a large number of those people are employed. So we're talking about employed people, and a large number of them are children. So what we're talking about are working families with children who are still receiving very, very low incomes, and you can see that by the 68% earn less than 100% of the federal poverty level, which is about $24,000, as you can see, for a family of four. So Micah sees a lot of people. We see a lot of families. We have services that cover the entire spectrum of life from birth
through seniors, and every kind of life area that you might imagine, because those are what our families need. And you can see what MICA's total budget for last year was then as well. So with that said, I think I'll turn it over to Josie and let her talk a little bit about the asset-funded activities in the Family Development Center.
Okay, and I can talk loud, not quite.
Yeah, that. So the little square thing should pick you up.
Okay, wonderful. So I'm Josie Stalen. I've been in this position since around November of last year. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about the asset-funded programs that we have at MICA. And the first one is our Family Development Program, Steps to Success. So our specialist for that program has remained at her full caseload of 10 families. And so far this fiscal year has completed 106 home visits, which is really cool. And it's been a really exciting year for our food pantry. So unduplicated count for so far this fiscal year, from October 1st through April 30th, we've served 2,678 individuals and 949 households. And just to get an idea of the volume of people that are coming into our doors each month, and this will be duplicated, but for average per month from October through April, we've served 293 households a month, around 862 individuals, and we are seeing an average of about 24 new households per month coming to use our food pantry. We are really busy each month with people coming through our doors for food. And in addition to that, we were really lucky this year to receive a grant from the Story County Community Foundation to add a commercial refrigerator to our pantry, which has been really nice, allowing us to offer more than just the non-perishable items that we have previously. And the response from families has been really positive to that addition to our pantry. And also, this is just something I thought was really cool. We recently received a thank you note from a person that uses our pantry. And I think it just speaks really well to a simple thing like providing food to a family, how that can affect their life. So I'll just, if you don't mind, I'll take a minute to read it. And this is just last month that this arrived. It says, to the people of MICA Food Bank, I'm writing to express my utmost gratefulness for the work of compassion you are all doing. Thank you for keeping for your help in keeping myself and the people I love healthy. Your grace, as well as that of those who donate, does not go unrecognized. I appreciate you. And she said love in her name. So I just wanted to take time to read that to you, that the work that we're doing really does impact families positively. So, thank you.
How are our stores in the food pantry? Are we able to maintain a good stock?
Yeah, so far we've got a really good stock. This week we were really blessed to have the United Way Food Drive come in. And we had the volunteers working really hard. I'm interested, we don't have the final count on pounds, but I know one business that donated, I think, had around 1,000 pounds to donate themselves, which is amazing. So we've been doing good.
Thank you.
I know that I just wanted a word in that letter of thanks, the grace.
Yeah.
That's quite a compliment to be noted for how you interact with your community.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, I'm Gloria Simons. I'm the Health Services Director. And so I'm going to review some of the health services that we provide for Story County. You are all very well familiar with the dental clinic, but we do much, much more. One of the most recognized program is the WIC program, and here in Story County we serve about 1,200 people a year, which actually turns out to 1,200 people a month. So for FY16 it was 1,276 participants in the WIC program in Story County. We also do maternal health, which is a pregnancy program and a postpartum. So we serve about 18 moms a month in Story County with education, and provide opportunity to do risk assessments and connect them with services that they may need to have positive birth outcomes. In child health, the funded programs through ASSET are voucher programs where we help pay for dental care for children who do not have insurance. And that's supported through ASSET and also Title V. So we have two avenues to help children get coverage. And you can see that we served over 100 children in that way. We do a child care nurse consultant program, and that works with child care providers. And it is a technical assistance program. Any child care provider can use this service. You don't need to be registered. You don't need to be a center. Home providers can call if they have questions. We get questions about lice, bed bugs, what kind of disinfectant to use on the lunch table, what kind of disinfectant to use on the changing table, and then some questions that have to do with the health of children. We go in and we assess the site, so we'll do a health and safety review that goes from what kind of outlet plugs do you have to what's the depth of the material on your playground, what recalled equipment do you have. So it's pretty in-depth, all to improve the quality of child care in our community. First Five, many people are familiar with First Five, and it's a relationship with primary caregivers who agree to do a surveillance developmental screening on children 0 to 5. Children that have delays are referred to us, or families who are experiencing some sort of stress. So it could be food insecurity, financial insecurity, and we will work with the family and get them connected to the resources that they need. Now, for example, a child will be referred for, a three-year-old will be referred for a speech delay, and we find that there are 7 to 9 other referrals that the family would be appropriate for the family. And we work with the family. So if there's an older sibling that needs services, we work with them as well. Baby Basics is a partnership we now have with Mary Greeley Medical Center. And we do a Baby Basics course. And it's once a month. It goes for 4 hours. And we cover everything from oral care to infants to nutrition, breastfeeding. We are very, very lucky that we have a lot of outreach dollars in some of our programs that we can provide experts. We also cover child care, what to expect, what to look for. We've gotten tremendous feedback on that program. So iSmile is a program where we have a dental hygienist work in the community to try to make sure that people have dental homes. We do a lot of presentations, work with schools, and they're the point of contact. If somebody is struggling with dental care, our iSmile coordinator is the one to call. And she has done a tremendous job of accessing services for families. Hawkeye is the health coverage for uninsured children, and we do outreach. That's mainly our work there, and also doing presumptive eligibility for Medicaid. I covered the dental vouchers. We have a breastfeeding peer counseling program. So if you're a mom thinking about breastfeeding and you have a child and you're breastfeeding, sometimes it's not as easy as it sounds. And we provide peer support. So it's somebody that has used the WICSER program and has breastfed. So you're talking to someone that's been there, and they're all receive training on how to be a peer counselor. So we're able to do that. In Story County, 58 women were served in 2016. Year to date, 91. So that's a growing program. We do our in-school sealant program, which is actually a little bit new to Story County because it's by eligibility for free and reduced lunch. And it's only been in, I want to say, 3 years that some of the Ames schools have qualified. It's a program that takes a little while to get some traction because it's highly dependent on the school nurses getting those permission slips back. Mm-hmm. So we go into the school and we do third and seventh grade and apply sealants. But the middle school doesn't qualify in Ames, but Meeker and Mitchell do.
And it's grown substantially over the last 2 years.
Well, it's growing, but it takes... we would like to see these numbers
sure.
triple, at least. I mean, because there were, and it's not income based, so it's any income.
And but the school has to qualify based on
the school has to qualify, and then those children that have Medicaid, we bill Medicaid.
Yeah.
And then we have the dental clinic, which is moving along. We are well on target to see over 2,000 people this year and over 4,000 appointments. And, you know, there have been some changes. We received word last week that the dental wellness program will no longer be tiered. Yay. So that we're hoping helps provide the services in a timely manner. The research showed that people were not making it to the third tier because of the churn. You're on DWP, you're on Medicaid, you're off, you're on, you're off, you're on. And so people weren't able to make it to that third tier. Well, the numbers were really low. It was only 3% making it to the third tier. So starting July 1, and that's all I know. I've asked for a webinar. I've asked for more information on how we're making that switch. And we'll, because they will do all 19 to 64-year-olds. So before, there were some 19 to 20-year-olds that were actually Medicaid. And now they're going to do, and there's the dual enrolled, the Medicare, Medicaid, but they're going to be the provider. And we want to make sure that the pre-authorizations we receive from Medicaid are honored by the DWP provider. And we have an agreement, our agreement is with Delta Dental.
Okay. Yes.
Since you sit on the board, be interested in hearing the update on this, whether it really does the intended effect or not by the time.
Gives us hope.
Yeah.
Okay, well. Gives us hope that we can see a light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
And that they're willing to look at what's going on and make better decisions for care of these folks. You know, that's something that's important in this environment.
Well, yeah, so everything Micah does is so important, but, you know, we think a lot about our dental clinic.
Yes.
And the hole that fills and how vital it is, and it's just a matter of building a program that can be sustainable, and that's what Arlene and the Micah staff have been doing such a great job trying to figure out how to make that sustainable. It's not an easy nut to crack to get there.
What is heartwarming is that people are seeing the Story County Dental Clinic as their dental home,
right,
and not just a place they go when they need urgent care.
Because they can't go anywhere else.
Now, we have, it was hard for me, but because we had a family that was using the dental clinic that they saw as their dental home, and then their life circumstances changed for the better, and they had private insurance, and we could no longer serve them.
And they were disappointed.
They were very disappointed, and how can we work this out? And so, yeah.
Marty, question.
Explain to me what a curbside consultation is.
A curbside consultation.
In your first class. I mean, just on the face of it, it sounds like a term that that's how you, a family or an individual starts the interaction with your organization. And I don't know if it's in an urgent setting or it's less than that.
Is that in our newsletter?
It's mm-hmm. It's just it was a term that jumped out at me because I had never heard the term ACE, which is an acronym for Adverse Childhood Experiences.
Right.
And below that, you've got something that says, you know, the first one I started offering a new service called curbside consultation. And I was just wondering what.
I'll have to review that. You know, because the way First Five works is we get a referral from a physician, and we call that family.
Okay.
We have tried to set up places where you could consider that curbside if we're in the clinic.
All right.
You know,
there's multiple approaches to qualify under this.
Yes. Right. Well, it has to come through the physician. Now, it's true that we see some people at the maternal and child health clinic, and we recognize that through our assessment that there is a developmental delay, and we will ask the family at that point if they want to go through their primary care physician and participate.
Okay.
So,
it's a routing path as to what the individual or family needs.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's family driven.
It's
a family driven service.
I guess it just is what it sounds like it is.
Curbside consultation.
You need to ask a hard question. It's just like, what am I not getting? Because there's very little to it. And it is what.
Well, you know what? I'm going to research that a little further, and I'll be sending something along.
I will ask him. I will follow up. I know where he works.
Well, we are so appreciative of what you guys do. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. Next is consideration of proclamation declaring May 8th through May 13th, 2017 is Economic Development Week, and we have Dan Colhane and others here with us. Dan, are you coming up for this, or am I just reading it?
I would like to know if the board would consider a wording change in part of it.
Sure.
Okay.
Do you want to talk about that before I read what's proposed?
No, how you want to do it. I just want to look at the wording.
Welcome, everybody. All right, so, Dan, I think I'll read this. Loris has a question or comment or suggested edit. Then we're going to have you address it, and then assuming that we declare this Economic Development Week proclamation, then we'll have photo ops. So, 2017 Economic Development Week proclamation, whereas the International Economic Development Council is the largest professional economic development organization in the world, dedicated to serving economic developers and their local state and federal partner organizations, and whereas the International Economic Development Council provides leadership and excellence in economic development for practitioners and their communities, and whereas economic developers promote economic well-being and quality of life for their communities by creating, retaining, and expanding jobs that facilitate growth, enhance wealth, and provide a stable tax base, and whereas economic developers attract and retain high-quality jobs, develop vibrant communities, and improve the quality of life in their communities, states, and regions, and whereas economic development professionals are engaged in a wide variety of settings, including rural and urban, local, state, and federal governments, public-private partnership, chambers of commerce, universities, and a variety of other institutions/entities, and whereas the creation of new opportunities for businesses and entrepreneurs is a key component to securing Story County's economic future for generations to come, and whereas Story County is committed to fostering a business-friendly climate that will attract employers, enable the county to grow and remain competitive on a global scale, and generate new jobs and opportunities for our citizens, and whereas the Ames Chamber of Commerce and Economic Development Commission, the Nevada Economic Development Council, and the Story County Economic Development Group are committed to providing quality resources that boost economic growth and enhance quality of life throughout Story County. Therefore, I, Rick Sanders, Chair of the Story County Board of Supervisors, do hereby proclaim May 8, 2017 through May 13, 2017 as Economic Development Week in appreciation of all our partners in economic development, the economic development field, due to make Story County the vibrant and thriving community it is today. Loris.
I'd like to go to three paragraphs up from the bottom, and I'd like to remove business-friendly and have it say Story County is committed to fostering a climate that will attract employers, etc. I went look up what business-friendly actually means. And here's the definition that I pulled from the English Oxford dictionaries. Favoring or conducive to business concerns or interests. And I think that we are conducive to many interests.
And I don't like saying that we're committed to being favoring business interests. So I'd like to remove business friendly and then just have the rest of it stand as is. I think it implies a preference.
Yeah, okay. Well, and I appreciate that. I'm not sure that I see it that way. I mean, this is an economic development proclamation. If it were a proclamation for zookeepers, I think we would be zoo friendly. I mean, I think it is descriptive as to what we're trying to do here. I don't know that I have a big issue with it going off. Marty, any feeling on this?
I guess I don't see on a semantics basis where, you know, I start off by just what it is and what it speaks to, and I see the connection.
What would be the opposite then? What would be the opposite? Business friendly, if we're saying business friendly, we're saying, according to the dictionary, favoring or we're making decisions conducive to business concerns. So who would be the opposite that we would also be representing? Think of it that way. People who might have a legitimate objection because they have property ownership rights, because they have something else. And we're almost coming in and saying we are already from the get-go favoring one side over the other. I'm just asking
that. I appreciate you asking the question. I am clearly seeing it. So I do not attach a negative connotation to the word business friendly. Being business friendly to me does not state or imply that I'm going to be unfriendly to anybody else. Just because I'm friendly in one place doesn't mean that I'm not. I absolutely see your point of view here, and I'm trying to deal with it. You guys who are economic development professionals, do you have any feelings on this one way or another? I mean, I don't think by taking it out we're saying we're not going to be business friendly, but I don't think by saying it we're saying we're going to be unfriendly to anybody else.
I'd raise a hand of indifference here.
Yeah.
This is about acknowledging the fact that economic development is a process, and there's a multitude of partners, and some of them are here today, not all of them. So I guess we're more about stopping time to say, hey, the Surrey County Board of Supervisors acknowledges that economic development is important, and they're proclaiming this economic development week. So I guess I defer to you.
Yeah, so let me read the paragraph as Laura suggested, Marty, and let's just see what kind of comfort level we have. So, Laura, I'm going to try to read that whole paragraph, and you tell me if I got it right. Whereas Story County is committed to fostering a climate that will attract employers, enable the county to grow and remain competitive on a global scale, and generate new jobs and opportunities for our citizens. I think that's fine. I don't think, Laura, that just because we're friendly to some group or entity necessarily means that we're placing them ahead of somebody else. And I guess it really doesn't matter. The definition to me of friendly does not imply that by being friendly to one entity or person, you're going to be unfriendly to somebody else. That's where I am. But I'm fine with it out. Are you fine?
I don't see it as a zero-sum thing, that if I say a positive thing about somebody, I marginalize somebody else.
Yeah.
Semantics.
You could just add, too, for the betterment of all of our communities, onto that. This is
a
watertight document.
I know. I truly feel strongly about it
because I brought it up.
I know. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I think this is one of those that by removing business friendly, it does not substantially change the gravamen of what we're trying to say here. I think in order, while I disagree with you that it has a negative connotation, I think this is one of those areas that we find a way for the three of us to come together, proclaim what we want to proclaim without having any baggage tied to it. So I'm going to suggest we remove the word business friendly, and then I would love to take a motion adopting this proclamation with the one noted change removing the word business friendly.
I would make that motion.
I would second that.
We have a motion to second. Any further discussion? Dan, what do you want to tell us about this?
All I'd say is thank you. We've got a number of folks here this morning. Cosette Hadley-Rosberg is on my board of directors. LaVon Schultz is here from the Nevada Economic Development Council. I'm sure there may be a board member or two from her board here as well. And John Hall, Drew Camp, and Brenda Dreyer. Brenda's right here, members of my team. This is an opportunity to recognize that economic development is not an individual person's opportunity. There are lots of partners. You folks are a great partner to Ames, to Nevada, and the rest of the Story County communities and the unincorporated parts of Story County. This is really an opportunity to say thank you and acknowledge the fact that there's many, many partners across the board. You mentioned the university, Des Moines Community College, Alliant Energy, Consumers Energy, all the energy partners. There's so many people at the table when it comes to economic development. This is a week to acknowledge those folks and say simply thank you.
And that's exactly what we're doing.
Bob, you
want to add? Well, the only thing I can add to that, perhaps, is with Nevada as an example, with Lincoln Way Energy and with DuPont, we're very dependent upon our farm community, too. They played a great part in bringing DuPont here because they have a product that DuPont could work with and that Lincoln Way Energy could work with. So I think we have to give credit to those businesses as well.
100%. Well, we're all in it together, and the only way we have success is to all be in it together. So thank you guys for coming. Anything further, board?
No. Mm-hmm.
Olson.
Aye.
Chee.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. It is Economic Development Week, May 8th through May 13th, and we're going to have a photo right now. Let's see, who's taking this for us since Leanne's not here?
I got it.
Hard to have a photo off without a photographer.
Oh, sure.
Thank you. Get up here in the middle.
Coming over.
Okay. No, thank you.
Is everything you bring up?
No.
Get over here.
Just get on the short.
I'm tall, I'm always in back.
No, I'm not standing in the front by myself.
But it's here, we'll do this.
Come on in. All right, well, thank you guys.
Thank you guys for all that you do.
Thank you.
Have a good day, Bob.
All right. Next is a proclamation recognizing May 7th through 13th as Public Service Recognition Week. Alyssa, you going to come up and talk to me about this one?
Sure. Morning, Alyssa.
You want to read it or you want me to?
Doesn't matter, whatever you
I'll
want.
I'll go. Perfect. All right, Public Service Recognition Week in honor of the millions of public employees at the federal, state, and county and city levels. Whereas Americans are served every single day by public servants at the federal, state, county, and city levels, these unsung heroes do the work that keeps our nation working. Whereas public employees take not only jobs but oaths. Whereas many public servants, including military personnel, police officers, firefighters, border patrol officers, embassy employees, healthcare professionals, and others risk their lives each day in service to the people of the United States and around the world. Whereas public servants include teachers, doctors, and scientists, train conductors and astronauts, nurses and safety inspectors, laborers, computer technicians, and social workers, and countless other occupations. Day in and day out, they provide the diverse services demanded by the American people of their government with efficiency and integrity. And without these public servants at every level, continuity would be impossible in a democracy that regularly changes its leaders and elected officials. Therefore, I, Rick Sanders, chair of the Story County Board of Supervisors, Story County, Iowa, do hereby announce and proclaim to all citizens and set seal hereto that May 7th through the 13th, 2017 is Public Service Recognition Week. All citizens are encouraged to recognize the accomplishments and contributions of government employees at all levels, federal, state, county, and city. Alyssa.
I appreciate the board adopting this, and then I want to remind everybody that tomorrow is our employee recognition. We, as part of Public Service Recognition Week, we will be recognizing all of our Story County employees, and I appreciate the support the board has given us in order to do that.
Yep. We are really fortunate here in Story County that we have 250-some-odd outstanding public servants who show up every day to do the work of the people of Story County. And Alyssa, we appreciate you helping us shepherd us through recognizing them appropriately and that fully expressing how we value what they do. Laura Sabardi, anything to add?
Thank you, and I learned so much, and every day I'm impressed with the things that I hadn't seen sitting out there that I see here about employees do.
All right. I would be remiss if I didn't credit the success that I've enjoyed setting up here by the support and the abilities of the people I work with. So.
Absolutely. All right, so I take a motion.
I would move that we proclaim May 7th through the 13th, 2017 as Public Service Recognition Week.
I second.
Motion and second. Further discussion?
No.
Chief?
Aye.
Olson?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Passes.
Thank you.
It is Public Service Recognition Week. All right. Page 2. Consideration of minutes from May 2nd.
I have 3 changes.
All right.
Okay.
Let's take a look. Tell me what we got.
Okay. First of all, under the part sponsorship of Leadership Nevada in the amount of $500, after the sentence that says all board members made positive comments about the organization, I'd like to have added, and in this sentence, Supervisor Olson said the request fell outside the board's usual practice of only funding projects that directly benefit a large number of citizens and suggested the board begin working on guidelines for our future special requests, miscellaneous special requests. So I feel that's important to put in here because that was a part of the discussion that as we continue, if we get more special miscellaneous requests, we're going to have to look at how we make decisions on these. That's number one. The second change.
We're going to say that one again.
Okay. And I can also add to the sentence, all board members made positive comments, add this phrase about the organization. Then continue with Supervisor Olson said the request fell outside the board's usual practice of only funding projects that directly benefit a large number of citizens and suggested the board begin working on guidelines for funding miscellaneous requests.
Okay, next.
Okay, next. Is under the animal control review. The sentence that says Sanders stated a full review will take place in the late fall. Actually, we've discussed, and it was 3 or 4 months, which would take us into September, probably at the latest. And then the third change is under liaison assignments. Chitty reported on meetings with, and it says the Ames EEDC, and really shouldn't that be the Nevada EEDC? Economic Development Corporation? Did you go meet with the Ames people?
No, I guess it would be LeBron, is who I talked to.
Yeah, Nevada. Okay. So those are the 3 changes I caught.
All right, so let me make sure I got it. I'm not repeating the sentence you want to add.
That's right. I can email that.
Shelly and Lucy, if we adopt that to get it in there.
Okay.
Just removing the word late before fall.
Correct.
And then change Ames to Nevada in the last paragraph, Nevada Economic Development Commission. So with those noted changes, do I have a motion to adopt the minutes?
I would so move with those noted
motion changes. Motion and a second. Further discussion? Olson?
Aye.
Chee?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Do we need something? Okay. Personnel actions, one change on what's in front of us. Amelia's reevaluation of position would actually be effective on May 14th. We don't do it midway through a pay period. So that's the last one listed there. Everything else is as listed.
Okay. Move consideration of personnel items with noted change.
Second.
Discussion. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Consent agenda board.
I would like to pull 11. 12, consideration of leadership aims signed permit application.
You want to pull what? Not 11.
No. Well, it's section 11, 12 under this section. I'm sorry. Okay. I screwed you up.
Yep.
That's confusing.
All right, so the only thing we want to pull from consent agenda is consideration of leadership aims sign permit application. Do I have a motion to adopt the consent agenda with noted item pulled?
So moved.
Second.
The motion and a second. Olson?
Aye.
Chi?
Aye.
Sanders? Aye. Consideration of leadership aims sign permit application and site development plan. You pulled it?
I pulled it just because this was such a unique, unusual situation. I see Jerry Moore, our planning and development director, sitting right here smiling. This has several unique things, and I don't want to go through all of them. Instead, I'd like to just talk about things that maybe I learned from this process, and also I've been requested by the applicant, Justin Dodge, to make a couple comments since he couldn't be here today. So the first thing I learned, despite being 20-plus years in communication, is just when you think you've communicated everything, you can always communicate more. So the part of the discussion that Jerry Moore and I had during this process is that I think on sign permits now and on the information about sign permits, we're going to add just a generic statement that says, and depending on the site selection, other requirements may be placed upon you or may be discussed. That, because that is one of the comments that Justin Dodge really emphasizes, that he felt like they had met the requirements as listed on the sign application, as listed in all of the documentation that was available to him. So this at least provides notice that, you know, your site may generate more discussion. And then the other thing here, just is something I guess I reinforced rather than learned, but just to be very clear that sometimes in dealing with volunteer organizations, timing isn't the same as if you're dealing with someone who's professionally doing something. And so I had an opportunity to see how the staff had communicated, and I think the staff did a great job of communicating. There also was communication from the leadership class that I think they changed kind of where they were headed, not only on this first site, but how they were going to handle an easement, et cetera. And so sometimes communication has to go face-to-face. So I did, after getting, you guys were not available, Justin ended up with me, and I did drive to Ames and took care of the communication personally so that we could work something out. And let him know that we had an expectation of. So with that, I just want to say that thank you to the staff and thank you to Justin for everybody that I know both sides were a little frustrated, and I think that it all boiled down to some communication. So thank you for everybody's efforts.
I think it would be remiss, as Rick was out of town last Friday and I was out with Brenda on in East Story County on some economic development, that Boris handled this, and I thought, well, I did some follow-up conversation with Justin, and he said as much. So,
okay, super.
I think we all, it was a learning experience. We were made better by it, and thank you for fleshing it out for the public.
Okay.
Anything further?
I move consideration, leadership, aim, sign, permit, application, and site development plan.
And I second that.
Motion to second. Any further discussion?
I just want to note that we did this with some conditions that they do have to meet. But Justin is aware of those. So.
Good. Chief.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. The sign permit passes. So that will be a new AIM sign over at the Caramoli mm-hmm. location on Highway 30. Public hearing items, consideration of resolution 17-100, FY17 budget amendment.
Good morning,
Mrs. Marsley. Good morning.
I'm good. Okay, so the budget amendment, I brought it forward so that I could get its publication. It was published in all three newspapers on April 27th as required by law. It needs to be done by the end of May in order to have 30 days for citizens to say we don't like it. the budget protest, I couldn't even say that. The revenues overall are increasing by $2.2 million from the last amendment. That's a 5.4% increase. The revenue amendment, quite frankly, is primarily important for fund balances and accuracy and closeness on actuals versus budgeted. I'll go through the departments and the revenues that we're amending, if that's okay with you. The treasurer, we're amending by $145,000. Attorney, we're taking away $97,200. Sheriff, we're raising $67,400. Recorder, up by $5,000. Animal control, up by $4,700. The engineer, up by $176,250. Veterans Affairs, by $4,800. Conservation is actually getting lowered by $498,785. Environmental health is increasing by $12,886. IRVM lowered by $5,760. Community services raised by $8,800. Community life lowered by $250,000. IT raised by $4,460. Planning and development raised by $1,100. Mental health raised by $18,350. And countywide department is going up by 2.691755.
Outstanding. Questions?
None.
I appreciate it. You know, this is just a reflection of what we did this winter. Thanks for slowing it down, Rick. Learned a lot doing that. Lisa, as a resource for kind of getting when you do these things, it's nice to have you to bet some of these things through, because sometimes suspicions aren't necessarily facts until, you know, I'm sure, Laura, you got much the same story, but thanks this winter, as you did, you know, put it in first gear so we could get through the budgeting process. And here, as we leave this fiscal, we're trying to find ourselves in very good condition. This, you know, we look good.
The expenses in this budget are overall increasing by $2.1 million from the last amendment, which is a 5% increase. Quite frankly, $1 million of those expenses is for the MHDD payment to the region.
Right.
And $970,000 is salary and benefits related in all departments. So it's not unexpected. It's typical. We look at the we put everything at the end of the fiscal year and say, okay, we need to amend for all of this at this point. The remaining expenses that are being amended are for unplanned expenses, grants, new equipment in secondary roads, and in conservation. So I do have a couple of comments about this amendment. Since the publication of said amendment, I have a department that has said that they can remove $90,500 from their amendment. The sheriff's office does not need the $60,000 for the office equipment and furniture. That is not going to happen until the beginning of fiscal year 18, actually.
And it was simply an ordering issue.
They couldn't get it in time to pay for it in this fiscal year.
And they don't need the $30,500 on uniforms and equipment. They'll have enough in their funds to be able to do that. So that would lower the public safety and legal by $90,500 if you choose to go ahead and do that. I also had a comment from let me just the right department here, from Callan Facilities, that I went ahead and put $26,400 in the building repairs and maintenance in the Justice Center facilities, that he's already spent those dollars and he doesn't think he actually needs that amendment. I don't know that we need to remove it. I don't need to appropriate it. If you want me to, I can just do it that way too.
And that's true for both of them, right? We can leave it just like it was published, and even if we leave it in here, the money is not going to get spent. It's just going to, it means that our ending fund balance is going to be a little higher than what we're showing right now. It's really the preference of the board.
So as
not needed, I just leave it.
Okay. It doesn't matter to me. I can lower those two, because that's the only option we have is lowering.
Mm-hmm.
For the amendment, or I can just not appropriate those dollars. I did not bring an appropriation amendment to you today. Quite frankly, I wanted to know your direction on this before I decided what I was going to appropriate. So I can do that in 2 weeks.
In my feeling, unless Laura, you or Marty feel strongly on this, this is what we published. This is what's in front of the public. I think it's great that we don't spend everything that we have. And frankly, those aren't going to be the only two areas. We're going to end up doing better at the end of the year, and then we say we're going to do, so that's just two components in it. I suggest we just leave it like it's published. We don't appropriate those dollars. I mean, you go, when are you going to bring the final appropriation to us?
I'm going to bring another appropriation to you.
Not the final? You're not ready to commit?
I don't know. The 23rd of May was when I was going to bring the appropriation to you, which is 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Oh, no, excuse me.
Yeah, it's two weeks.
Yeah, you have a limited luck next week. I was going to bring on the 23rd, I was going to bring the appropriation that covers all of this and the remaining elected officials' dollars that are not appropriated yet.
Mm-hmm.
And then if we need another appropriation for any department, I can bring that anytime before June 30th. That's since the budget's amended, we're good. It's the appropriations that could happen up to the very last minute. So.
Okay. Just leave it.
Yeah,
I'm semi. All right.
Okay, this gives us an ending fund balance for the general / supplemental funds of 26%, for the MHDD fund of 17%, for the rural fund of 17.25%, and secondary roads of 32.5%.
Which is really solid percentages on all of those. Secondary roads are a little complex just because we have so many projects that carry over from year to year. But it feels like we're getting that. We were up in the 40s at one point on secondary roads, weren't we?
It's coming down. And
26% on our general is a really solid place for us to be.
Right, because as you just said, we usually come in higher than we anticipate. So I usually figure about 6% higher usually on the general fund, not so much on the rural fund. It's pretty much... It is what it is, but the general fund I plan on 6% higher, so we'll be in the 30% range probably.
Any questions for Lisa before we open the public hearing?
No.
All
right, in that case, we will open the public hearing and ask if there is anyone who would like to address Resolution 17-100. Seeing no one moving the microphone, we'll close the public hearing and turn to the board for action.
I would move consideration of Resolution 17-100 for the FY17 budget amendment as proposed.
I second.
Motion and a second. Discussion. Lisa, anything to add?
No.
Thank you for your efforts.
Absolutely. Kitty.
Aye.
Olson.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Resolution 17-100 passes, and we'll look for the appropriation in 2 weeks. Additional item, consideration of revisions to the Story County credit card policy after the 7-day review. Lucy Martin.
Good morning, Lucy.
Hi. Morning. I received three comments. Two of them made it in for the publication of the agenda. The third one did not. I just got it yesterday. With your permission, I'll go over the three and then ask what you want to do. So only one of the comments was actually about the paragraph that was added, which says, in the event there is no other payment method available for a software or software license purchase, the Board of Supervisors may consider use of the county's credit card. Board consideration shall be prior to purchase. Any such purchase shall be considered as a separate agenda item, and if approved, purchases shall be made with the board's card. The inability to use any other means of payment shall be documented and included with the agenda item. The suggestion was made that would be expanded beyond software purchases and also at the discretion of the elected official. That's a comment I received from the sheriff. The other two comments I got was one from the county attorney to add trial exhibits to the list of approved purchases. The question, it actually came in as trial-related expenses, but after I had a discussion with Jessica, it sounded like it was the exhibits. Trial-related expenses sounded way too broad for me to put into a policy, so that's what I used. And then VA Director Brett McLean wanted to add the Veterans Affairs clients to the bus tickets, and I talked to both Carla and Brett. I just clarified that language a little bit. It's for transient clients, so these are people that are passing through Story County, and the tickets are given to them to get them, you know, from not maybe all the way to their destination, but at least part of the way. I think they see very few clients like these. I think maybe two or three per year. And then there's a lot of sort of crossover between general assistance clients and VA clients. So they all come into HSC and
Yeah, so I was just going to ask if we did not add the Veterans Affairs clients, don't they still qualify via general assistance?
From my discussion with Carla is that the income requirements might be a little different. I asked, you know, Brett, are these like the ones that Carla sees? And he says he does see, you know, people like this.
How do we handle it right now?
He hasn't had anything happen. I mean, he hasn't had any of those for quite a that I've seen for a long time.
Huh. Yeah. Okay.
So I don't know if they go to general assistance and they get taken care of there and it doesn't get kicked over to VA.
I haven't seen anything at all come through his request.
Okay, and
claims.
County attorney for trial exhibit expenses, how do we handle those right now?
It sounds like Jessica's using her personal credit card to pay for those, and there are things, you know, the trial exhibits kind of run the gamut, but things like, you know, medicines to show where people have been stabbed and copies of documents, I don't know, it's my, you know, experience with trials is pretty much limited to what I see on TV, so probably should never be.
Okay, and then the sheriff's request was basically that all elected officials would just do what they wanted?
Well, first, we've all come up against this issue where there are certain expenses that we make where they won't do a net 30 and they won't invoice us and it's credit card only. So, you know, you can talk to Kevin in my office who had to rent a ballroom for a precinct and then tell his wife that, you know, that's why there's this big expense on his credit card.
More
you know,
expense.
Right. And then on a Tuesday. I mean, we've all done that. I've done that. My staff has done that. And all elected officials have experienced this. My feeling is when you leave it up, there's always going to be situations where they won't accept it. I fall back that this is a very restrictive policy for a reason so that we don't get ourselves into a jam. If you create very slippery slopes where it's at the discretion, then that almost negates the reason for any policy.
Correct.
That's in my opinion, but...
Yeah, so as our auditor, can you give us recommendations? So clearly what you presented to us originally made sense. You thought it would pass muster with the state auditor. Now with the three additional questions, tell us what your thoughts are on
that. And then when Alyssa first, you know, approached us about doing this, I said, do you want to limit this to software? That was a discussion that Alyssa and Lisa and I had. You know, we did limit this to software and software licensing because that seemed to be a real sticking point that we found. So do you want to broaden that? That's up to the board. Or do you want to just limit it?
In the event there is no other payment method available, and then just take out the whole software language, the Board of Supervisors may consider use of the county's credit card. It still would be a restrictive policy. It would still say we're not just using the credit card because we feel like using the credit card. And I think it would more closely pass muster with the state auditor.
Well, the thing about having the policy, if we ever have any exception to that, that's when we get written up. You know, when people are like, oh, it was an emergency and I had to do it this way. Even though it's perfectly explainable, that's something that's, you know, a deviation from the policy, and that's we get written up for that. So
I'm going to throw a different voice in here, so, and part of it's based on my own experience for when I worked with Norwest, which is now Wells Fargo, a long time ago. And I traveled about 2.5 weeks out of every month, and the expectation of this financial company was that I use my own personal credit card, and then they'd pay me back in 30 days. Well, first of all, I said, and I should be floating you a loan because at no interest, okay? And second of all, you make the assumption that I got a credit balance. Now, my travel was paid through quarterly, okay? And you make the assumption that I don't have a balance on my credit card or I'm not using, you know, my financial management is different. And what I did is I took a draw, and then I had to bring, I traveled cash, and then I had to bring back receipts. And I think that
we need to look at that as part of the option here. When I talked to Jessica about this, I could really identify with some of the costs that her attorneys are being asked to put on their credit cards or on her credit card. They're not anticipated costs until they head into the trial, and often they're vendors from outside of our normal vendor area. Okay? It sounds very individual. And so that to me was a key difference about what do we want to look at. There's either some kind of petty cash, or is there that Jessica herself, only Jessica and I guess Teresa, are even allowed to use that credit card? Is there something we could put in place for? I mean, it's an elected official or the person who's using these for that limit. And it comes back to, if you think about this, we're saying, sorry, you can't run for county attorney, or you can't run for, I guess I'll include sheriff at this point, okay, unless if he's putting things on his personal credit card. But the point is, they are putting large expenses on their personal credit card because it's a trial, it's a very unique situation. So we're saying, sorry, if you can't carry a credit card with a $5,000 or $6,000 balance personally to help us with our accounting, then you can't run, or you can't be an assistant county attorney with us if, heaven forbid, our county attorney's credit card reaches its limit. I mean, there's a real practical application here when you start expecting your staff to pay for expenses. So I heard her case on it because of the uniqueness of the expenses. I hear with this VA situation about maybe that is handled with a petty cash also. By petty cash, a couple hundred dollars or whatever it takes to get that bus ticket purchased if you don't want to allow those bus tickets on it. Okay? I don't know how to answer the sheriff's response because that's a real broad one. Okay, so I have to know more information about why, how much are you purchasing from people that you can't get through vendors who will send a purchase order. But it did strike me with Jessica because of the types of purchases that they're putting on. There's no rhyme or reason to them. They can't anticipate them until sometimes they literally are almost ready to go, and they can't wait for the extra 2 weeks that a purchase order might take to set up, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I didn't hear anything different than what we were talking about. We need to keep it pretty limited. Mm-hmm. We need to determine what those items are that's an appropriate use of this, and I think it needs to be restrictive. And I didn't hear you say anything different than that.
Except with it coming to the board, if it's each individual purchase for the county attorney.
If it's not one of the noted bullets, and what I'm hearing is some kind of acknowledgement that occasionally there are trial expenses or trial exhibits mm-hmm. that do need to be part of that bullet point. But right now, if it's one of these bullet points, it doesn't come to the board. It's an approved purchase. Mm-hmm. One. And then we're trying to give ourselves the ability to go to do something that's not one of the bullets. How does that happen? Clearly, we ran into the problem with the software purchase where somebody just made the decision. I either couldn't do it or it wasn't easy to do it on a PO, so I'm putting it on the credit card, and then we had to clean it up after the fact, and we're trying to avoid that. We're trying to make sure we don't get written up by the state auditor wherever mm-hmm. possible, and it's public dollars. It is completely appropriate to be really restrictive with how public dollars are utilized. So, well, I mean, what I'm hearing, and if I'm hearing you correctly, Loris, is where I've been the whole time, we need to add a bullet point for trial exhibits or necessary unforeseen expenses related to a trial that the county attorney would use the county attorney's credit card, the county credit card mm-hmm. for that. If we change the way the verbiage in what we do for the transient population mm-hmm. movement, that's fine with me. I can't get to a way. What I heard the request from the sheriff, and I may be missing on this, Connie, but what I heard the request from the sheriff is just basically each elected official ought to be able to decide how they use their credit card, and I think that flies in the face of what we're trying to do here.
And I had that conversation with the sheriff. So
okay.
Yeah.
You are correct. During the same. With those bullets, those are two special bullet points.
Marty, what's your thoughts?
I think Lucy alluded to it. You just spoke to it earlier. I don't want to give ourselves a policy that we incur a flag from the state auditor by creating a carve-out. I mean, that's self-inflicted. You don't want to do that. So I think we...
And I'm not going to beat around the bushes here. That is the first file that that office pulls when they come here. So, it's the full and entire...
I'm not going to support anything that would...
They may spot check a lot of other claims, but they pull the whole file and verify that we have documentation and that it follows the policy.
So 100% certain that when the state auditor or any auditor finds an issue like this, more times than not, it is credit card related. That something inappropriate is being done. It's appropriate for us as the fiscal the entity with fiscal responsibilities for Story County to have a really restrictive policy for how these cards are used. We need to recognize that there's a reason we have those cards, mm-hmm. right? So we need to recognize. So here's what I'm suggesting. I'm suggesting that we pass the credit card policy. We add a bullet point, and I don't know exactly what the language is, but it's not just trial exhibits, but it's trial exhibits and other unforeseen expenses that go directly with the trial. Make the grammatical or the addition to bus passes, and then we get rid of for a software or software license purchase.
Should it read, in the event there's no other payment available for a purchase?
No other payment method available for a purchase.
Okay.
The Board of Supervisors may consider, then that gives anybody an opportunity to come here, and the Board makes that determination, and if we make that determination, it's all reflected in the minutes. That's what I'm suggesting. You guys, whatever you want to do.
I would second that. Are you making the motion?
You make the motion.
I'll make the motion, based upon his excellent wording.
You willing to second that?
Oh, yeah.
All right. So we got a motion and a second. Now, my suggestion, this wasn't part of the motion, but my suggestion is we look at it one more time before.
That was my... Yeah. And then, since you have limited agenda next week, so we'll bring it back for the 23rd meeting?
It'll be fine.
Okay.
I do have a question, Connie. You're sitting back there. Was there something that the sheriff wanted you to say?
I didn't know anything about it.
She's here for the budget amendment.
I'm sorry.
I was curious what you're going to do with the policy, and I forgot to come here. So I was going to make the budget amendment.
I did not mean to point out that you were in the back of the room.
That's okay.
All right.
Okay, so we got a motion and a second. We are, before final adoption, we are going to review this one more time. Give Lisa time to give verbiage to her head shaking there.
But there's no other payment available. So
2 weeks.
That could be your comment. My comment.
Revisit the amended.
I agree.
All right.
There's my amended motion and revisit in 2 weeks.
Yep. Olson.
Aye.
Cheney.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Let's see, discussion and consideration of a contract between Story County and Iowa Codification for the Story County Code updates for $4,000 in online hosting at an estimated $650 initial cost and $450 annual web hosting fee. Alyssa.
Good morning again. It's time. We are due to codify our ordinances every 5 years, so May of 2018 will be our 5-year mark. The last time we did this, we did outsource this. It
doesn't mean that the county doesn't have any
work to do. What they do is they put it all together. It comes back for departments to review. They work with our legal counsel to look at that. Iowa Codification does take a look at our code and compares it to what, if there hadn't been any legislative changes, to make sure there is nothing that contradicts. There's nothing in our code that contradicts what has happened at the state level. And we get that done. Justin took our current code. I sent him a PDF of all 300 pages so that he could give us a quote in order to do that. It was $4,000 to update that. Just note that the last time we did this, it was $7,500. There was a little bit more work involved.
Well, it hadn't been done.
No, it hadn't been done for quite a
while. When we did this 5 years ago, it had not been done for 20 years?
I don't remember the actual years, but I know it was a comment on quite a few of our audits. So the auditors do take a look at whether we codify the ordinances every 5 years, and we would be subject to a comment next year if we didn't get this done. So it is important that we look at this. The other part of this quote would be to get our code online in a very, what I consider to be a pretty robust online version. If you look at legislative services, I kind of think it's the same way. You can search it. You can send links to individuals. It would be very user-friendly. There are quite a few cities that use it. If you look at the city of Nevada or the city of Ankeny, they utilize this service that is offered through Iowa Codification. Down at the bottom of the first page, it also, I had a conversation with him when we do change any ordinances on updating that on a regular basis so that our online version is not out of date, and he did include that also if the board wishes to do that. Instead of waiting 5 years to update our book, we can do it on a regular basis, and that way the project isn't quite the undertaking as it has been in the past. So.
Super. Thanks. Questions?
Makes sense. We started the meeting today with a presentation from Jessica showing us how much Iowa code has changed. And we need to be responsive and reflective of the fact that when the legislature changed something, that we need to have our coding reflected. Mm-hmm. Happens.
Well, thank you, Alyssa, for bringing to my attention that you thought that the company who had done it 5 years ago could come in and offer not only the update but the online service, because that's a key point of what we want our new or refreshed website to do. And it's great because I had that ordinance file sitting on my desk thinking, how are we going to coordinate this and how much coding is going to be required, et cetera. And she just came in and said, by the way, should I get a quote? So thank you very much. Yes, I'm pleased with this. I think the cost for updating at $35, including the website, every time we pass one, is reasonable, considering then when we have to do it in 5 more years, there's going to be much less work. So I don't know if it's quote will be any less. Their prices will probably go up. But yeah, so anyway, so I'm very happy with what came back.
And you'll make a motion saying?
I move that we adopt and create the contract with Simmering Quarry and Iowa Codification, to have them update and provide the online update, the software, and we use that software packet, link to it going forward. And that we also engage them for the real, basically real time or current updates of new ordinances as we create them.
Second.
Motion and second. Further discussion. Olson.
Aye.
Keith.
Aye.
Sanders. Aye. Passes. Thanks. Good to be on a schedule getting this done. That was a mess when we put it together 5 years ago.
Thank you.
Departmental reports. We get to close the day with my friend Joe Quaker.
But he doesn't have any.
Oh, yeah, he brought show and
tell. Oh, did he bring show and tell? Okay.
Wouldn't be a meeting without it.
He knows better than to come here without show and tell.
Morning, neighbor. I'll be right back. I think it's out here.
Oh?
Do you know what it is?
Uh-huh.
Early in the growing.
I just saw him walking in carrying stuff.
Should we have taken our Zyrtec or our allergy tablets before? Probably so. All right.
Austin's over there sneezing on us. Bugs Bunny would like that, but only for a little bit.
Is that a radish?
Good morning, board.
Good morning.
Good morning.
A little bit of information, maybe a little humor, but we'll get down to business. It's go time.
It is.
I wrote some stuff down. Here it is. I'll start with where we left off quickly with drainage district maintenance. Second week of February, we wrapped up grant 5.
doing the logging operations there, and it went well. We're getting the hang of it. We even got the brush piles removed, burned up. There was some cutting out of them for some of the adjacent landowners worked it out where they needed some firewood, so it's always nice to do some renewable resource there. And one of the local landowners adjacent helped us pick sticks up because, you know, when you drag brush out, it always drops some things in the field, and they can't farm around that very well. And with their help, it worked out pretty good. We worked with Scott Wall. We did levy some new money this round to do some projects. A lot of that's going to be, as we've talked about, the maintenance part where it's spraying the resprouts and where we can get access with our herbicide that's labeled for that, aquatic use, and of course our applicators are certified. I think we do have a tour this Thursday with Scott, the director of the conservation, Mike Cox, and I'm not sure who else on the board we've invited. Darren Moon will be there. Are you going to be there, Mr. Shady?
I got invited.
All right. Are you? So do I need to rent a van? Are we over a four-person pickup truck?
I'd assume if Darren's with us, we're up at
four. Okay. So we're going to go look at some projects that are upcoming.
I'm right back. You know, like.
I'm...
The answer is no.
I do remember a tour that went bad and we got stuck one time.
So that won't be tomorrow.
So that's about it on drainage districts. So we'll kind of go to what's happening now. Well, first of all, planting. So we started a couple weeks ago with the hydro seeder. And some sites that didn't grow so well last fall, but the road department, secondary roads, they're on track. They've been doing some work, and we're keeping up with them. In the second week of April, Tyler Kelly, my wingman, went up to the University of Northern Iowa, the Tallgrass Prairie Center, where we submitted a grant last year for seed. That was CAP seed, Transportation Enhancement Program. And we received 30 acres of diverse mix, native grass and flower seed, roughly about $20,000 worth. So that seed goes back into our roadsides.
One of the things you hear spoken about, this is the sidebar, that you're starting to see one of the things on a CRP plantings in some of your cover cropping is that palm or amaranth seed is coming in on these things. And yeah, well, yes, I'm sure you're aware of it, but it's just like, you know, that's one of the worst, most unkind cuts you can do on a seeding thing is to bring in something that is just virtually Superman of weeds.
Right. Well, I'll touch on Palmer Amaranth in a minute. I want to run you guys late for lunch, but I will touch on that. So that's planting. Burning, these are all the files. I didn't have time to tally it all in the back while I waited. But we may have a record breaker for roadside burning this spring. We hit it hard.
Excellent.
I do have some pictures. Someday I'll put a slide presentation together. It's really a different look where you can see where my crew, roadside management, burn in the right-of-way. There's always a ring around the tree, or I mean the utility, or the phone box, or the telephone pole. A lot of people light these things up, and it melts the insulators, and I saw the utility guy the other day. I forgot to ask him what it really costs to replace one of those insulators that would get melted, but I'm sure it adds up over time. So we made good progress there. If you've been down R38, we just about burned from Zumwalt Station Road on the west side of R38 just a mile out of Slater. So that's a lot of burning, and that's never been burned. And that's been planted for about 10 years in native. So I'm glad we got to that. So let's get to weeds. 2 weeks ago, you guys passed a resolution. This by state code 317 or 314, 317.13 actually, is what needs to be published in the paper, and it was. And I'm going to read it briefly, just kind of summarize it, just to make sure we know what's going on. Where it says, each and every person responsible for managing land shall cut, burn, or otherwise control all noxious weeds as defined in this chapter. And that's straight out of code, okay? We shall be controlled as prescribed in this program. We control order to the orders made by the Board of Supervisors. The owner and person responsible for managing any land shall keep said lands free from growth of any weeds that may make streets or highways adjoining said lands unsafe for public travel. And then I threw in there, producers with sensitive crops or anyone with roadside spraying concerns should contact the Story County Weed Commissioner's office with my number. Okay. So in essence, what this says is, here's your notice. Now I will send, for those that, I hate to call them complaints, you know, people call in about things that they don't like, or they can be notices. Sometimes I already know they're there. Our standard operating procedure is to, just so you know, is to send a certified letter, and they're aware that I'm aware of a problem, and then I give them so many days to control. After those days are up, I can do a couple different things. I can fine them $10 a day, woo. You know, that's not a lot of money. It's really not a deal breaker for them. If they're not going to control the weeds, I don't think the $10 fine is really going to matter. What I can do now is go in and control and assess the cost to their to the auditor so they get taxed on that. Any of my control measures. So typically in Story County, again, you've never had to do that. When I do give them a notice and the time to control, they work with me. They may have a limiting factor of some kind where they can't find someone to do it. But we work it out and we get it done. They want the weeds controlled. They want to get it done. So we've never really had to go to said lands without permission, in essence. Am I making sense?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Okay. Something new. The DOT is contracting out their spraying. That's a lot for me. I have a lot of calls that come through the office about weeds in the DOT property. Of course, I'm in Story County, Highway 210, in essence, Highway 30, the interstate. That's not my deal. I'm not supposed to be on there. Sometimes at midnight I do that, but off the cuff. It's interesting, the weeds that they put on there for control, some of them are on the state noxious weed list and some of them aren't. Buckthorn, Canada thistle, bull thistle, field and bindweed, leafy spurge, plumeless thistle, blah, 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 teasel. One thing that's not on here, oh, it is, wild parsnip. So they have it on there, okay? Now, wild parsnip, 80% control. They have trees on here, too, and I can give you this. I'll shoot you this through the email. Their trees, they only need to control 4 feet or shorter. Ours is about 10 feet when we do a contract. There was a lot of discussion in the weed commissioner conference about this. Almost, I guess, setting them up to fail with all these weeds on here to control how far they're going to get. And I think I sent you, Mr. Chitty, Johnson County's weed ordinance that they passed, or one of you I did.
I think I've got it, actually.
Back in the 90s, these guys, the Board of Supervisors in that county, by the way, actually put poison ivy on the weed. So if you're talking about, you know, things that are crazy, you just got to be careful what you put on here because you may not be able to enforce it. So the state's going to be out there. Palmer Amaranth, okay, it's an annual. It's coming. It's here. We have it in Story County. It did come in on native wild flower and grass seed.
Yes, we brought this headache to ourselves.
And, you know, that's mainly, we could talk about that forever. I'm pretty savvy on this topic. We're actually having a workshop on August 3rd here in Story County for landowners and operators to identify it and how we can control it. One of the problems with Palmer Amaranth is Roundup won't touch, glyphosate products, Roundup, it's immune to that. Chemicals, so it's hard, you know, Roundup Ready is not going to work anymore. It did come in on the native grass and seed orders last year. So far, I've been in my circle, it's not in the mix's issue. They ramped up the testing. It was actually the seed testing companies that kind of failed to identify this. They weren't doing their job, and they've been policed a little bit, if I can use that word. So I think we're on the right track with that. contract brush spraying. I don't know if I'll talk to you guys before this starts or not, but we need to get a contract set up for the two or three contractors that are out here in the state that do this for a living. We will finish up the northern tiers of Story County, going west to east to Zeering, and then dip down, probably was that Sherman, and back over if we can get that far. Not a lot of brush up there. We're pretty, you know, as far as brush.
Lincoln, Sherman, and Howard.
Yeah, if we can get across that far. Yeah. So, and we'll just keep coming down. Story County IRBM always tries to get at least one township done in-house. So, weeds.
So, I went out right on S-14 underneath the railroad tracks and just looked around a little bit. We know what this one is, okay? We're ahead of the weeds, or they're ahead of us, I mean, this year. Okay, it's going to be a good season for these buggers. This is a Canada thistle. This is a state noxious weed. It's a perennial. So it's about a foot and a half tall already. It's hard for us to spray these right now. This is the best time to spray them. But when does everybody call up? When they're this tall and purple. It's a little too late to do it then. But we try to identify these now. Our spray trucks are ready to go. We've done a little bit so far. It's hard to see it. These are all melted in with the brome grass. You see, you can't see it very well. We're after these. Our control plan has been hard surface roads, site distance problems, areas that we know about. I call them political hotspots, no pun intended, and complaints, but I call them notices. So we have two spray trucks, a UTV, a couple summer interns, Tyler and myself, so we go after it. Here's the plant that caused all the trouble last year that you're not supposed to cut. This is how tall this one is right now, minus the root. So it's grown up quite a bit too. This is wild parsnip. So this will have an umbel. This will be this tall with a big yellow umbel. And again, when that umbel's already done, the plant's already done its deal. The time to spray it is now. So we're going to try to get ahead of the game on those areas that are of concern. Last but not least, some people put that on their salad. I don't think I'm doing it. This is poison hemlock. Killed Socrates, you know. Wife got mad at him. She took the leaves and stuff and ground them up and made tea. I'm not making it up. This thing's this tall, okay? You find it in fence rows around where livestock is a lot. This will be this tall. Big, huge, spotted, purpley stems. This will get 10 to 12 feet tall on the noxious weed list. Good time to spray it now. So my point is there's other plants than just the Canada thistle that we all used to think was public enemy number one. We got a few more. Of course, you guys probably heard Amy talk the other day. I could talk about plants forever, but we all got things to do. Let me look at my list.
So I have a question about the hemlock. It's around, you said, like where cattle and horses are.
Yes.
If they eat it, is it poisonous?
They'll get sick. Mike, you're a horse person, right? They know enough to stay away. It's in the
most of the time the livestock aren't going to eat that unless there's no other option.
Great. Okay. They know to stay away. You know, they get a little sticky from it, and it's like, ooh, I don't like that. You know.
Okay. Thank you.
Done?
That's it. No questions.
Any questions for Quick?
Well, you covered everything.
All right. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
Okay. Public forum number two, opportunities for members of the public to comment on items that are not on today's agenda. We're not taking any action because we can't, but we might take action in the future. Anybody? Seeing no one moving immediately to the microphone, liaison assignments, committee meeting updates, and announcements from the supervisors. Morris.
Okay. Just a note and a thank you, a public thank you to Sally Jensen. About 10 days ago, I think, she showed up in my office one afternoon and said, how'd you like to take a ride through drainage ditch number 5? And it was a week ago. It was when we had rain. So I got a tour of drainage ditch district number 5. So thank you. Listen to the management training. Excellent speaker. We had some training on handling employees and discipline. And I attended the Smart Economic Development Conference last Thursday, down in Des Moines. It was a statewide conference. I attended the sessions on ways to finance projects, and Bob Johnston, who is well known about abatement and TIF, spoke a lot. Don't know that I liked everything he said, but I learned a lot. Also, they had a great housing session that I attended, talking about bringing in housing. It made me realize how our housing situation really is unique because of Ames, but we share so many issues with outlying from Ames. So I appreciated that. An update on the animal control, just as I continue to visit the various city councils, I hear some things in common, and I pick up new information, new specifics from each one. I'm learning how they handle their various animal control situation. Yesterday I met with Brett McLean, and we discussed a couple of things. He wanted to talk to me about a book that the Iowa Department of Veteran Affairs is publishing about the Vietnam War. And they recently, a couple of years ago, published one about what was happening in Iraq and Afghanistan, but this one is targeted toward the Vietnam War. The goal that they have is to try to get one to each Vietnam veteran. Preferably, we'd like to have the costs covered through donations, etc., because the books are $10 a piece, and here in Story County we have 2,400 veterans, which is $24,000. Brett has identified about $9,000 from his budget as we wrap up this year's budgeting that he believes could be put toward it, and we discussed a little bit about capacities of Freedom Flight. Any extra money they've got right now, they are basically, Brett's referring over veterans who have a need that isn't covered under the veterans' benefits, and Freedom Flight is helping to fund some of those special needs. So the next step, I guess I look at Barb, look at Deb and say that I think we've wondered with a conversation with Lisa Markley if there's some way that we could see if targeting or running those through an account or how we would do that here at the county. I don't know. But the real concern is people send them down to the Iowa Department of VA directly as donations. They may not get credited to Story County. So that'll be a project that'll be coming up. I told them good job on their quarterly or on the newsletter. It looks really nice. Upcoming, of course, looking forward to the breakfast and then the tour with the county soil and water commissioners, the farm tour. Thursday, I think at least a couple of us are going to the Story County Economic Development Group. They'll be meeting at 10 a.m. up in Zeering. Friday, I'm going to Urbandale to sit at HRDA, and I'm going to sit with their director of scheduling and the routes, and she's going to tell me all about how HRDA works and show me exactly how we're dispatching people, how we go ahead and plan the routes that, or how they take it, how we can use shuttle service. So I'm going to get the inside look. Next week, I'll just do that because we have a limited agenda. I'm going to go to the Passenger Transportation Summit at DMAC. It's a statewide. And then I'm off to Washington, D.C., not to politicize, but to watch my niece graduate from law school out there.
Outstanding. So, good.
Okay.
Marty.
I think Morris made note of the soil farm tour. Joe made note of our drainage district ditch tour. Boris made note of the Story County Economic Development in Zeering. IELCO Economic Development meeting at 3 this afternoon. The ACAP meeting on Friday. And we cannot let the meeting end without saying way to go, conservation, for what you did Sunday. That was the only thing missing was valet parking and chopper 13 overhead, because there was a lot of people there. I tell you what, you needed the whole dead end to park people. I don't know if you had any attendance numbers, Mike, but I was shocked, and I came actually a little bit late hoping to miss the rush, and I don't know if it ever let up. So, good job on those guys.
Good. Outstanding. Next week, Loris noted, is a limited agenda, so will be a very, very brief supervisor's meeting If there's nothing else, I'd take a motion to adjourn.
Moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thanks, everybody.